As we have been studying right through the Bhagavad Gita, and especially in this 15th chapter, that our goal in life is to realize our true self, who we really are. Because we do not know this, because of the ignorance of who we are really, we get all these problems, unending problems in life. There is really no solution as such. You try a solution in one direction, the problem comes in the other direction. And thus, it is really frustrating. The frustration is because of ignorance. We are trying to find out something where it is not, and thus it is a frustrating search. If somebody tries to find out, our Charles Feldman somewhere in New York City, will not find him because he is here. So, similarly, to find out what we want, like happiness or peace or love, somewhere outside, is always going to be a very frustrating experience. It is not there. It is to be discovered in one's own true self. And that has been the message of Bhagavad Gita throughout. And as we saw, it is given on both these levels, the intellectual understanding as well as practical experience. Now one has to get that knowledge from intellectual level to the level of practical experience, and that is what Vedanta calls yoga. Yoga is getting practically united with this knowledge, so that it is not now just information, but a tangible, practical, living experience. So, in 15th chapter, therefore, last time we were seeing this beautiful verse that by abstracting, by removing the effects of ignorance in our life, and what are those effects? That the ego and pride that we have about ourselves, and the attachments and all the ramifications of that attachment. We try to get enjoyment from some object, and we don't get enjoyment as such, but we develop attachment, we develop a bondage. And that bondage then becomes a big problem. Just as any bondage is against our intrinsic free nature, so the bondage is very jarring. I was telling that what bondage do we have yesterday at our Brown University class, that, well, do we not see that being in this body? It is a bondage. Even if you are, say, asked to stay in a dungeon 6 feet by 6 feet by 6 feet, it will be terrible. Now it is a much smaller body, you know. It is, we are confined to the body. What a big, you see, problem. In this very tiny confined space, we have been arrested. It is, see, can we get away from body, identification with body? We are living in the body. In fact, we are identified with it, not even aware that we are separate and the body is separate. We are so tied with the body. And thus, like chains, when you are tied by the with the chains, as you move, the chains also move with you. You move with the chains, you have no escape. So, thus the body has become a chain, we move with it. And that is then develops into secondary further attachments. You get connected with some other bodies. It sounds harsh, but that is the truth, friends. As Vedantists, we should be courageous to probe and find out the truth. And we get connected to different other bodies, call them my mother, my father, my son, my daughter. Not only that, it goes further, my granddaughter and so forth, you see. It is my grandchildren. It kind of grows, the attachment continues to grow jarringly. And we do not know where and how to stem this. It is the more and more chains get added, that's it. And therefore we need to find out a strategy to escape this attachment. First of all, there should be a conviction that I have to get over this. There should be no deceit or conceit about this, that no, I read Bhagavad Gita, etc., and those are nice ideas, but I really don't want to get over those attachments. Then we will not seriously be inclined into the spiritual practices. So there must be this resolve, this conviction that I really want freedom. If you are asked that, do you want freedom or not? Hardly anybody will say, I don't want freedom, I want bondage. Nobody will say that I want bondage. But then we do exactly that by which we incur bondage. If we want freedom, then go to get freedom. If you want freedom, but do the things by which you will add more to the bondages, then it is difficult. So there should be a conviction in our mind that, yes, I really want this. Ask your mind that, do you really want it? Then work for it. Whatever we truly want, we work for it. It is, if we don't work for it, what it means is, although we say by our mouth that we want it, we actually don't want it. It is like people, just not to displease other, hey, this is an invitation, please come for this program. And then they say, I will try. By the way they say, you know that they are not going to try also. It is just to, instead of saying directly, no, I won't be coming, that may sound harsh. They say, okay, I will try. It is, but it is said in such a way that you right there know that it is not going to be any serious try there. So, then what the person is not to be expected to come there. So similarly, about spiritual life too, there is, if there is the desire to become free, then we naturally will make a serious attempt to become free. It is that because our life, our actions will determine what we get. You may say that, well, I want to go to Florida and board a flight that goes to California. Then in spite of your saying that I am going to Florida, you will land in California. So, if we say that I want devotion to God in my life, I want the freedom, I want to know the true self, but actually go on incurring more and more bondage, then it means that you really are not seeking it. So one should be a seeker, what we call in Vedanta terminology. The Sanskrit word is very beautiful, sadhaka. Sadhaka means the one who has a goal. The word is not very easy to translate into English. The one who has a goal in life and is making actually efforts to realize it. It is not a theoretical idea, but a goal that the person is working hard to achieve. So that is what is meant here, that you have the Adhyatma Nitya, that the fifth verse that we had already seen, but because of its tremendous importance, I am deliberating on it again, that Adhyatma Nitya, always the orientation of life is towards this goal. Everything that you do is to fulfill this goal. So, like if a student wants to appear for a test which is very important and needs lot of study, lot of focus, lot of concentration, then shuts everything else from life for that time. Because everything is to be directed, all energies are to be directed towards the goal of succeeding in that test. So, similarly, if we want to get to the goal, the energy is getting just frittered away in all other directions. They have to be stemmed. As it is said, those holes are to be plugged. If you want to get a jar of water filled, you are pouring water and there are holes in the jar. Now what happens? The jar will never get filled. So you may be doing some spiritual practice, but if those holes through which all this is frittered into the attraction of the sense pleasures, then it is difficult, friends. So let us understand this, that our goal is very important. We saw this, that we all want happiness in life. So go to the source of happiness, that is self. We want freedom in life, go to the source of freedom, and so forth. And then it is told that by thus one becomes gradually freed from the pleasures and pains. The pursuits of pleasure and pain then is not important for that person, because the person knows that pleasures come, go away. Pain also comes, go away. That doesn't really, one doesn't need to strive for that. It is a matter of automatic being there, being just as if you are on the path, there will be certain things you can see on your left hand side through your left side window, certain things from your right hand side window. But you do not get stuck in that, you proceed where your destination is. So similarly, pleasures and pains, they will be coming on the way. There is no single person who never had any pain in life or never had any pleasure in life. It is every human being will have these. But they need not become the motives for our living. Get disconnected from this pursuit, and then this enlightened person, that is enlightenment, to know that this world, as we are in the world, this is full of suffering. That first noble truth told by Buddha, that this world means suffering. Some sufferings are called pleasures, some others get called pains, that's all. But they all are sufferings. This world is suffering. There is no escape from that unless you get the knowledge. And the knowledge is the solution for that. So, therefore that person is called a mood, from whose life this delusion has fallen off. So, being freed from the delusion, this person goes to the goal, gets merged with the goal. And what is that goal that was described? That is the all-pervading self. Then the confinement of the self in the body is gone. We feel, I am in this body. Where am I? I show to my chest, here I am. I describe that myself as per the condition of the body, that I am 5 foot 8 inches or whatever tall. Now what is that? It is not the height of the self, but it is height of the body. It will be height of foolishness to call it the height of the self. It is the height of the body, and it keeps on changing. When the fellow, that fellow was say 1 year old, that was not the height of that person. It is a changing phenomenon. But we refer to I as 5 feet 8 inches tall, weighing 180 pounds or whatever it is. So, it's a wrong description. But now this person realizes that I am infinite, I am all-pervading. See, now there is no bondage, otherwise I am confined in this cage. When you know that I am everywhere, I am really everywhere. Here it is, feeling is just a delusion. I am really everywhere in everything that is breathing or not breathing. It is I who am present. And just as the ocean is present in every rising and falling waves, can you deny that? You cannot. Ocean is really the life of every wave. Ocean is really the self of every wave. So also that all-pervading self is what we truly are. And the bodies, they rise like waves and subside like waves. On the way, they interact with other waves, form temporary connections that this is my mother, this is my father, this is my wife and my husband and so forth. This is my friend, this is my enemy. When the waves clash, you see they are enemies, like, you know, clashing. So we also clash with each other and then call each other evil, you know. That is evil. This is just so. Really all of that is pervaded with the same self, the ocean. And thus you realize this truth. And with this realization, your journey comes to the destination, ends in the right destination. And thus you don't have to now keep on roaming about. You have reached. Like your GPS tells you, you have arrived at the destination. So, you have arrived at the destination. Now your journey is over. You get out of the car and then relax. So, our life reaches that state of relaxation, that from which now there is no disturbance. There is no loss of peace anymore. You have become infinite. And then the next verse is telling now about how does this bondage come about? What is the connection between me and my all these sense organs? I used to get this question even as a very like a middle school student, that what is the connection between, say, these hands and I? I don't call those hands as mine, but how this connection gets formed, I and these particular hands and this particular set of eyes? It is, how is it that, what ties it together? It is difficult to find the answer to this question, that how this particular set of flesh, bones, blood, it gets called as I, or at least mine, and not some other similar heap of flesh, bones, blood, and that gets called as you. How, what makes the difference? Now this answer is provided very beautifully in some verses to come. It provides a tremendous insight into this psychology, that how our perceptions come to us, how our responses come, all these beautiful, very sublime ideas are there, and then how the body and the mind, they are connected with each other, and we are beyond both body as well as mind. So Lord begins the next verse. ममैवांशो जीवलोके जीवभूत सनातनः मनःषष्ठानीन्द्रियाणि प्रकृतिस्थानि कर्षति. The seventh verse. Verily, a part of myself, having become this eternal embodied soul, draws to this world of beings the senses with the mind as the sixth, which rest in nature. A mystic verse, really, that first thing is mamaivamsho, that we are all really parts of God. Now you may ask this question, which comes very naturally. How can you make the parts of God, the all-pervading one without second, how can you have parts there? Now here, the poverty of language really shows up, that you cannot answer this question, how can you have parts of God? It is, here part means that to show that you and God, like a wave is part of the ocean, in that sense, that remember that you are divine. That is what is being emphasized here, that remember our connection with God. We are in and through God. We are part of God in that sense, that yes, we are like a wave is part of the ocean, is, you know, filled with the ocean all the time, and is, has no other way but to go back to ocean. So also our whole existence is in and through permeated by the divine. That is the idea in saying that we all are parts of God. And as Swami Vivekananda was never tired of emphasizing this aspect of our existence, that know that we are divine. Never say that I am a sinner or I am nobody. Never feel that that sense of depression. That is a big curse, that we feel depressed or dejected, and then we start cursing ourselves that I cannot do anything in life, I am bad, this is always with me, that I always fail in life. We tell all these wrong things to ourselves. We go through this world scared all the time that somebody is out there to hurt me, to kill me, and so forth. No, let us remind ourselves this truth, friends, that we are divine. If God is not in me, then God is nowhere. Let us tell this to ourselves, that if God is, then that God is in me. I am divine. I am part of God. So let us feel this. And then, now, how you feel separated? The separation is because of ignorance, because of this mysterious ignorance. Where from did the ignorance come? Well, don't ask this question. It is ignorance. You cannot get where the ignorance came from. I don't understand Japanese. If you ask, where did your ignorance of Japanese come from? I will not know where it is ignorance. It didn't come from anywhere. But if I study Japanese, what will happen to that ignorance? Charles? It will go away, exactly. So this ignorance will also go away. Let us not waste energies in tracing the source of ignorance. But forget about, there is ignorance. And that is the reason that we are feeling this separation. Now in ignorance, there is all cause and effect. The connections and all are seen that, you see, there is in this world, there is this feeling of a limited I, what is called jiva. And we all feel that I am. And this I am is associated with all the ideas about this I, that, I am Irish, or I am Scandinavian, I am Indian, I am the Spanish, whatever. All these things we surround ourselves with. We say, I am, as I told earlier, weigh so much, my height is so much, these are my parents, this is my house, and these are my qualifications. You fill all those, you know, that your all information in your, what is it called? Vita, huh? Biodata, huh? So you fill all that, it is called Vita? So you write all those things, what works you did before and so forth. All that information, that is I. Now, how the connection between this and all the qualifications and attributes, it comes about? See, these attributes keep on changing. What you will feel there, say 5 years ago, will be different. Suppose in the meantime you achieved a PhD, then that will get added there. Earlier it was not there. You publish some papers, and then they will get added into your now description there. So this is changing. But the idea I am, that remains the same. Earlier, I was just bachelor's. Then I had my master's. So the change took place there. Earlier, was finding it difficult to walk. I had a knee problem, and then I had my knee surgery, knee replacement, and after some time now I am able to walk nicely. So again that description changed, but the same I is felt, the one who had a bad knee and who had a good knee. The knee changed. Maybe a metal knee has been put there, but that metal knee now becomes the I, part of I, not even a metal. It is strange, but that is how it becomes I. You refer to it that I went to Germany, now that metal piece also, actually it went there, but it is, you call it I went there. When you stand on the scale to weigh, that weight of that also gets counted as my weight, you see. So it is, now these attributes keep on changing constantly, friends, but the I never changes. That is what it is called, that it is Sanatanaha, that it is the eternal embodied soul. It has an eternity about it. What its eternity is in is impossible to tell. Where is this eternity? And whatever you try to find, show that is eternal, it is continuously changing. There is really no eternity, but yet an undeniable awareness of eternity in all the changing things. It is like, as Buddhists say, a very beautiful idea that you have, suppose, a torch, and you move the torch very fast in a circular movement. Now what happens? You see a circle of light there. Now is there a circle of light? It is just the motion of this torch that is creating a delusion that there is a circle of light. There is really no circle. So similarly, they say that all this flux is somehow creating a sense of continuity and a sense of eternity. There is no eternity to be found there at all, but the delusion of eternity is there. And just for the sake of language, we can say that a delusion of eternity is eternal. So it is that is what is called jiva, an individual soul. And what it is, it has two aspects, one internal and external, that we analyze. The internal aspect is that which our senses do not see, but the actions, the functions of that internal instrument, they are seen outside in the body. So body and the world outside, there we see the functions of it. So these two are told here, that manashashthani indriyani prakriti sthani karshati, that the senses with mind as the sixth, which rest in the nature. This is the information. This software, which really is then working through the hardware called the body, that mind and the sensory organs which collect the information, and also the motor organs, they are all parts of this internal instrument. In Sanskrit the beautiful word is there, antahkarana. Karana means instrument, and antaha means inside. Because you don't see it outside, we speak about it all the time because we feel all the time. My mind says like this, or my mind, as if it is something tangible and we know about it. We really have no idea of its functionings. It is, and we cannot determine that what thought to get in your mind. Try, you know, that I will get this thought, and all others except that comes to mind. It is very rebellious, very difficult to control. It is, tell mind, don't think of this, and it will keep on thinking of nothing but that. It is the very obstinate. And we don't know what makes it function like that. It is not under our control, we don't know about it, but its effects are known. I remember again, I had told about it earlier also, that in the early days of computers, when in India we acquired a computer in our at our mutt there, and one engineer lady, and she is in United States these days, and sometimes I meet her, she came to put those things together. And then I asked this question to her, can I hear these words, hardware and software, can you explain that to me a little bit? And she very beautifully told, you know, for a lay person to understand, I haven't found any better, more correct and yet simplest way of putting it. That she said, whatever you can see, whatever you can touch, is all hardware. And what makes it work that you don't see, that you don't touch, that is the software. It is the information through which it works. It is. And then when I reflected it on our own behavior, it is just like that. My actions, my perceptions, my conclusions, they all have these two components. The inner instrument, the software, the outer instrument, the body, and the other instruments. So therefore, these two things are there. So first it describes the internal instrument, the where you store information, where you have all the potentials, all the capabilities to work through the available hardware. And it chooses the hardware for its functioning. That is very important. So this individual soul, it according to its desires and all, has this internal instrument. And this internal instrument is very durable. It doesn't die, so to say. It is there always. And then it keeps on acquiring the external physical hardware according to the needs, according to the availability, according to the possibility. So this is what is called sharira, body. In the next verse it is told, shariram yadavapnoti yachapyutkramati swaraha grihitvaitani sanyati vayur gandhani vashayat. A beautiful analogy is given. When the master, the soul, that is called the master. See, let us put it, since we were giving analogy of a computer, let us extend it further for better understanding. You say have a computer, and there is the hardware, there is a software, but mainly it is acquired for the user, is it not? The user of both software and hardware is different from it. You are using both the software and the hardware. You are the user. And thus this user who is using the internal instrument, the mind and so forth, and the external instrument, the hardware, the body and that. So that has acquired this instrument. And how has it been acquired? It has been, we had discussed that earlier also at many places in Bhagavad Gita. Let us remind ourselves about it, that how is that instrument acquired? In the same way that we acquire outside, well, I need to do all this work. And so, accordingly, I acquire the instrument. Yes, I have to now dig the soil there. So I get a shovel and a digger and all that. So that is the instrument gotten according to my needs, my requirements. So this soul, this perceives this separateness from the divine, and that misperception that I am separate makes that person unite again, and for that seeks the instruments. So the desires come because of that. We all have so many desires. Now why are these desires? What do they express? What do they signify? A desire, it shows that you have the idea that there is the object with which if you unite, your life will become better. That there is that big house, I think I should have that, I have a desire for it. I have a desire for eating nice things, so that, you know, I will feel better if I get those. I have a desire to, say, have a partner in life. Somehow I feel that if I have a wife or a husband or somebody like that, then maybe my life will become a more full, complete life. And thus, what do these desires indicate? They indicate the basic drag for oneness. And why is that drag for oneness? Because in reality we are one. Only because of ignorance we feel that we have to do something to become one. No, only thing that we have to do really, it is not really again doing, is get rid of this ignorance. And then there is no desire. You are all. You are already perfect. The imperfection was the feeling of ignorance, outcome of ignorance. And because of that imperfection, you thought that if you get this, you will feel happy. So what is the desire to become one with something else? And thus, what you really are looking for is to become one with the whole, with the complete existence itself. And then, because these desires, if you observe, keep on expanding. It is not that if you fulfill one desire, that let me acquire this house, or let me win this jackpot. Those desires come, but after you get it, suppose, that you got a jackpot. Is the life reaches fulfillment? No, now you are stuck with it. What can I do with that money? Come on. I remember that interview that lady gave. I told about it in this class too. That she, an aged lady, and then she and her husband, they won a big jackpot, lot of money. And then the newspaper reporters, they always are eager to get interviews, so they went there and asked, well, now you have all this, what plans do you have for spending this huge money? And that lady, she very wisely told, see, at my age, I even do not buy green bananas. It is a very nice statement in a way, that it is, what can you do? You know, it is, the desires go on multiplying. You had the desire to get money, and now you are now stuck with what to do with that money. It is, you suddenly discover that you have so many relatives and friends that otherwise you never knew about. But as soon as you win a jackpot, then all of them suddenly surface. So, it is that everything that you do to fulfill any of those desires, they just go on multiplying your desires, because that never is the real way of fulfilling them. The knowledge is the way to fulfill them. It is, you know, one lady that I knew had a big problem that she found it, you know, that to find a partner, and then when she got married, after a few years, she kept on complaining that I am not getting a child, you know, all what it is such a torture, why this is happening, and all that, you know. So no satisfaction. I mean, first let me get married, then let me get a child. Now got one child, and after that she said, just one, you know, is, I think, say, in fact, she asked the question in this way, when should I get another child? As if I am going to tell you. What did you said that it is, if you get one, you will be very happy? No, that creates again that the desires are insatiable. Only this knowledge brings fulfillment. Anyway, so it is told here that because of those desires, then you acquire a corresponding body to express it. You have now the mind and all those, that instrument, full of those desires, and those desires are, for those desires they have been acquired. Now corresponding body, the external body also is acquired for that. Now that external body is not permanent, in fact means it is really very flimsy. For after a little while it starts becoming incapacitated and dies. In fact, it is given up. Like if you see, in many cases, only the attachment prevents us from giving it up. Really, as an old car, suppose it is not doing any good to you, requires lot of maintenance, not reliable at all, then you say, okay, I will get rid of it, get a new one. That it is, but why you want to have a better vehicle? So this soul sees, our mind doesn't necessarily know it, because it is full of attachments. So it is, doesn't really, neither has it capacity to do it. So, but the soul sees that my needs are not getting fulfilled by this vehicle. So, it gets another vehicle. And then, what does it do? Suppose he or she has lot of things in the car, maybe many valuable things. When you buy a new car, then you transfer those into the new one. It is there the analogy of house comes much better instead of a car, and that you are living in this house of body. And now people have to change houses many times in life. So what do you do? Suppose Joan changes the house. Now when she changes, they goes to the new house. Not that she leaves everything that was in the old house, all the trash and everything she lets it go. But all valuable things, that all her gold and diamond and everything, she takes to the new house, is it not? All her millions and all, and she will not let it go in the old house. She will take it to the new house. So similarly, when we acquire the new body, all the wealth is taken to the new body. And what is that wealth? It is described here that it is taken out just as the wind takes the fragrance from the flower and takes to other places. So like that, it is taken out. What is taken out? All the software and all the information that you have put. You don't want to lose your work, you see. Suppose you want to change your computer, what you do? Recently I changed mine, so a friend of mine did all that what was in the old machine. I did all the copying. Because I didn't want to lose all that, so did all the copying. Took it out from the old machine and put it on the new one. So, similarly, this Shrotram Chakshu Sparshanam Cha Rasanam Ghranam Eva Cha Adhishthaya Manaschayam Vishayan Upasevate, 9th verse. Presiding over the ears, the eyes, the organs of the touch, taste and smell, and also the mind, and he enjoys these sense objects. Now, in the new body, again all that thing is put on, the ears and the eyes and whatever other organs are there, those organs, the information is taken over. It is, you see, the organs are not these external instruments. Many times this question is asked that how these organs, they are called the software or the subtle body or the internal instrument. They are internal instrument, friends. They are information. You may think, like in your computer, you may think it is the printer that is printing. It is that printer, that apparatus is external, but that is not really the printer. You have a printer driver, and that software really is the printer. It is, this software is transferred. That is how you see that I am using the same printer with my new machine, but what does it do? It downloads the driver of that printer on the new machine and thus can work that printer. So all the eyes, ears and all these functions, our organs of motion, motor organs, they also are like that, and they are output devices. The sensory organs are like input devices. So they all are really part of the software, and so they are all taken, and therefore when it is, they are taken, the dead body, the body remains there. The eyes are there, they don't see anymore. And the ears are there, they don't hear anymore, because the driver is now transmitted. It is no more there, it is taken and put into the other body. This is a rather deep subject. We shall continue to discuss it by the grace of God next Friday. We will continue from the 9th verse onwards. Any question about today's discussion? Yes, Charles.
You said that you shouldn't think that other people are out to hurt you or kill you.
Yes.
But Arjuna and his brother stayed in this mansion, and it was built of a flammable material, and they were planning to kill them. So how did it even happen to him?
Well, it is, what did it, I didn't say that people will not be there to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
But can they kill you? They can only kill the body.
Right.
You remain unhurt. And even if you think, does it prevent it? It doesn't prevent it. So, therefore, the idea there is that there will be people, there will be situations when your body could get hurt. But even if you keep on thinking about it, it will happen. Even if you don't think about it, it will happen. And important thing is, therefore, to remind ourselves about our divinity, so that whatever life or whatever healthy thing that we have in the body, we will be able to make good use of it. Otherwise, we will be always scared and not make proper use of the body. Like somebody bought the car and then thought that, well, there are so many vehicles going on, and then my vehicle may get hit and get damaged. So always kept it locked in the garage. So what is the, why did you buy it then? So it is like that. So the fear constricts us, limits us, does not make us, allow us to make good use, proper use of the instrument. So remind yourself of the divinity, that is the important idea there. Yes, John?
Do you think that when a person dies, they don't resolve a particular issue, something that's got them in the grip, such as, let's say, like alcoholism or drug abuse, do you think that tendency would carry on into the next life, into the next body, the tendency to be propensity to do the same damage, self-damage?
Yes, that is a good question. That if we have the tendency to do this kind of self-damage, be fearful, always keep this idea of being scared, then does it continue? Does it become a tendency that will be carried to the next life? Yes, friends. Yes. Therefore, one must make a concerted effort to root it out. You are right there. That all this negativity, if we just keep on holding on to it, then it doesn't leave you even if you leave this body. That is why I request people, try to tell people this great message of Vedanta, that be courageous. Don't feel scared. Don't feel that sense of inhibition. Develop this courage. If you don't develop this, then you are stuck with this sense of fear, the sense of that inferiority complex, that all gets carried to the next life. Just as your good things, good tendencies get carried, your wrong tendencies also get carried to the next life. So it is very important, therefore, to put this idea in us, that we have to work to get rid of this. Let us not harbor this, that no, I am scared, no, I don't want this. It is, let us not have that kind of inhibition, that kind of that inferiority complex. It is, I don't mean to say that we should be then overtly flamboyant or anything, but it is, there should be no feeling of inferiority complex or scare or such things. So that's very correct. Yes, Shravani?
So when you say that the doctor moving from one hardware to another, or somebody moving from one house to another, is that really how the soul moves through a body, or it just imagines one body after the other?
That is, analogies, It is, these are analogies to make it understand that the living of the body is not that our tendencies or information or the work that has been done or all the sensory and motor organs, they are not gone. They are taken to the next house, to the next body. And then how you acquire next body, actually that is that will come later, that according to all these tendencies, you look for the next body also. It is, if suppose this example I like, if a person has the desire to eat a lot, a human being. Now, as human being, you have very limited possibilities of eating, really. You compared, say, a cow or a hog, how they can eat anything more or less without damaging their stomach. Human beings have so much problem, you know, that I am allergic to this and that and can eat only so much and eat a little more and the problems begin. But the desire is there. But this body is not suitable to fulfill that desire. So what that tendency, next time when it is going to take the other instrument, it will take, look for a body fit to eat more. Like a cow can keep on grazing all the time without having any digestion problem, you know. And they do not have probably the all those problems that we have. Everything is fine. They can eat whatever they want and never put on any extra fat or any such thing. It is. So you choose the body according to that. It is like you choose the house that, oh well, I want to practice music. My present house is not suitable for that. So next time when you have to say apartment contract is over, like this body is the contract is over, now you want to get another apartment, that time you will see, let me find out where I will be able to do my music practice, and thus you will choose that. So that is the idea.
Is it about choosing or creating?
Huh? It is creating is also a good way of telling that certain things are available, certain things are created, in the sense that they are somehow manufactured with the available things. So it is both, and all that depends on our availability. Suppose you want an apartment which is right near the train station as well as the airport, and because you need to travel frequently, so you have a nice car, you want a garage, you want also entertain many guests, so you want big rooms and many bedrooms and all those nice kitchen arrangements. It's that apartment you can't get in, say, $500 a month. It will require much more rent for that. So you should have that much money to pay for it. So we need to have that much money to buy that kind of a body. It is not just desires, but the capability also. Everybody can get whatever body they want, but no, there is price tag. And so while I have the desire maybe to get a very good car, and I begin from Lamborghini, but then I see that I have only about $1,000. So within $1,000 I may just get a picture of Lamborghini, that's all it is. So I come down, and then maybe a 20-year-old something, a 3 times used car, I can get for it. So it's like that. That it is, what can you get depends on both your desire as well as what you can afford. So we shall continue that today. There isn't much time. So we'll conclude with the closing prayers. गीता सुगीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्र विस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतं एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।